From New York City, the city of ambition, aspiration, and desire, this is Populax with Thomae Serdari. Populax is the place where we bring attention to objects of personal luxury, objects of desire, objects that have shaped our experience. Through Populax, I hope to bring to you all the fun and profound ways my guests, accomplished creatives from across ages, cultures, and professions, relate to one object of desire at a time. Many people know her as one of the two characters depicted in Brooklyn-based artist Jordan Castile's monumental mural of 2019 on the High Line, The Bifalls. Harlem knows her as the creative entrepreneur who abandoned a doctorate in accounting for the real hustle that gave her a purpose, business and business mentoring. I know her simply as Falou, a pure ray of sunshine, a creative, a believer, and a voice that connects us to a new type of desire. Let's dive right in. So nice to meet you, and I'm so grateful that David put us together.
Yes.
And also excited to be talking to you about your work.
Thank you. This is my pleasure, actually, to be here.
Falou, why don't we start by you telling us where you come from, how long you've been in New York City, and what is your practice about?
Yes, I'm Falou, and I'm from Senegal, West Africa, and I have a master's degree in finance and accounting. I actually brought it here. That's the reason why actually I came to the United States to have PhD, actually, 2013. Then I went to school for almost a year, and I just couldn't keep going with it. It was something else was calling. So I had to leave that and started my business 2015, actually, because when I came, I worked for this company called Portabella. They sell suits in New York. So I was a salesperson there. Then 7 months later, I quit and started my business with $192 as a street vendor. I was selling what almost everyone was selling at first to start, which was either African jewelry or hats, which is the main product on 125th Street in Harlem. So I started selling those, and I noticed myself being very particular when it comes to objects. I like rare things. I started making the hats, putting a little extra on them so they different to everyone else's merchandise. And also the jewelry, well, of course, I'm from Africa. I have suppliers everywhere, Ghana, Senegal, and I was getting the best, you know, African jewelry from Africa to here and resell them. Also, the first question you asked was my practice, where I'm from, which is very important, actually, because I think culture is something that we all have and we all need to nurture and to see the value of it for the new generation coming. You know, it's something to hold on to and also add up your extra specialty, which is your gift, for the new generation coming. That's how culture progress. So this culture of mine is, it's a tribe, actually, spiritual tribe in Senegal, created by my great-great-grandfather, Mam Cheikh Ibrahim Fall. And this guy, his whole life was dedicated to uplift humankind in every kind of way and teaching also how to do that. because he seemed to know that doing so will lead you to God, and whatever your God is. So that's what Bifal is. It's a spiritual tribe in Senegal, and now we find Bifal everywhere, literally, in all kind of race too. Yeah, because it's a spiritual lifestyle. This spiritual concept of Bifal is not like very much attached to religion, because we notice that religion divides somehow. And everything about Bifal is to the togetherness of humankind, which make God who he is.
Sounds beautiful, and I have so many questions.
I am
hesitant because I want to, for a second, take you back to what you were describing about the jewelry you were selling. And I've always admired these street vendors. I like a lot of the pieces that I see, but I've always been hesitant because I'm not always certain that these objects come indeed from Africa. And so can you tell us a little bit more about that? What is it that I should know as a consumer in New York City who admire this type of object?
You know, that's a great question, actually, because I see a lot of Indian, a lot of Chinese, but mostly Indian, actually, who are very interested in importing African stuff. But yet it don't come from Africa. It comes from their country, meaning factorized, right?
Yeah.
So I think that if you want to get something authentic, something from Africa, it's not even really safe anymore to buy it to somebody from Africa who is here, because most of them also just got to get the money right now. And in a cheaper way, too. So what they do is buy from those Indian and resell them. Because a lot of these buyers don't really know what is authentic or not. But there is a market here on 116th Street. Most of the stuff there comes from straight from Africa. There's part to go and people to know to get what's authentic.
Yeah. Now, this is very helpful, actually, to connect this to this spiritual practice that you were describing before. Are there rituals other than meditation? Are objects part of what Bifal is all about?
Yes, we have different objects, like so many of them, actually, you know. I have one of them here. It's a ball.
And let's describe it. Yes, it's a ball made out of
ebony wood. Ebony, right. So the purpose of this ball, according to my grandfather, is that he said his, the one he had, and it's a big one. It's actually still there at the house. He knows that from whatever goodness he worked from his whole entire lives, and he say lives, meaning that he lived, and lived again. He say every greatness and work, good deeds he done, and he was rewarded by his God, he put it in that ball. Now, that ball serve humankind. The reason why he had it made, so you can touch it and know that this is real. This is not this. Well, to reflect the spiritual meaning of that is that he made it to show people that this is the reality of what I'm talking about. Now, that ball he used to carry to go door to door to ask for food or whatever you want to put in it. Now, he will take that and go to another poor family who don't have nothing to eat, and he will serve it to them just to symbolize what he said about this particular object, which is the ball, a divine ball that serves humankind.
Right, because it's put to practice. It's not just a symbolic object that becomes decorative.
yes.
assigning status to him because he is the spokesperson of this spiritual practice. On the contrary, it's out in the street
right.
with him as he's practicing his good deeds. What are some of your good deeds, Falun, now that you're here in New York City?
They say that it's not humbleness when you talk about your deeds, but I'm going to just say one thing that I can say that I'm proud of, because it was, first of all, it's fun because it was with kids and here in Harlem, my dear Harlem that I love so much. It's three summers before pandemic. I actually, that time I had my storefront, but I was noticing the store was by 125th and 5th Avenue. It's by the park. So I was noticing a lot of kids that lives around were there. And I see police sometimes take them because they was fighting or smoking there or doing some stuff. So I approached one of them and I asked them, so what do you guys think if I give you an opportunity to make some money before school starts again, so you can buy sneakers or things that you need? And there was, you know, kids with money, they they was excited already. They're like, how much you're going to pay? I was like, I'm going to make it happen for you guys. Because instead of you guys being here doing nothing, what if you spend it with me on tables on 120th Street where I started my business? And we make money together. And so I can teach you how to start some kind of business with your school. So I put 10 tables on 120th Street. And I mentored 13 kids while I have my store running.
Wow, that's a lot of work.
You have no idea. A lot of money to be spent too.
Yeah.
Because these kids, man, they need guidance. They need a lot. At least the ones I know here in Harlem.
Mm-hmm.
These kids, they will wake up and there's no food on the table for them.
Mm.
There's no breakfast, nothing. You wake up and you get out and find your own food. So I had to give them breakfast every day too, regardless of the money I was paying them every week. That's the first thing that I actually did for my great grandmother, because her whole life was to feed people. So that was the thing that meant more for me, to give them breakfast every day. The bacon, egg and cheese that you hear in Harlem. Yeah. So they all have what they need with the coffee or whatever they want. And then they'll go to, you know, set up the table. I was making them sell hats. Custom hats that I will make myself, tie-dye shirts, which is a summer thing to sell, and sunglasses, which people love during summer. And so every 30 minutes, 40 minutes, I'll go to a table, spend there 30 minutes with them, and then I'll take over and make them sit to watch me, how I interact with the customer.
Yes.
And the display also is very important for me. I was teaching them that to also apply that in their room, the display. Because one thing I know is however you present yourself outside is the reflection of what you are in your mind. I was trying something with them, you know,
absolutely,
at the same
yeah.
time, giving them opportunity to get something out of their day, doing something positive, and also to make them think that their life can be better than this, even if they don't have a lot.
Have you followed up with them? Do you know where they are?
I see them, and it's funny because I get to be a kid with them that time, which was something that was very fun. So I kind of put myself a little lower on this, you know, level, so I can understand also what they're going through, really.
Mm-hmm.
And it got to a point that I'm even involved in their relationship life, because it was a whole group of kids. They all know each other in the neighborhood. So they get to come and tell me, oh, my girlfriend did this to me, or, you know, things like that. Or this person came, oh, I'm gay, but I don't know how to talk to my mom about this. And so I was kind of in the middle of their everyday life, which I love so much because kids don't really open up easy. So if you have that with them, I think you should use that to help them in a way, because it means you're going to put some impact. If they open up to you, they trust you. You can put a great impact in their life. So now, when I see them in the street, I make sure I have 2 seconds with them, ask them how it works. What are you doing now? Are you thinking about doing some kind of, you know, kind of just get in touch with them again. And it's always smiling, joking, and it's just beautiful. Yeah, that's something I'm proud of.
You learn from them. You learn what the problems are, but also mm-hmm. what is funny, what is cool, what does a 17-year-old find interesting in today's world. And I think that's very important, since you also have this creative practice and mm-hmm. and you try to take these ideas and create products that are relevant for mm-hmm. your customers.
Yes.
You really transformed from a sole proprietor, which is what you were in your individual storefront, mm-hmm. to an entrepreneur.
Me in business, it's a very spiritual relationship, truly. Sometimes money issue, finance comes and like distract me, but I try my best to keep that spirituality connected to my business in a way, because that's where ethics comes from in business. I am so interested in seeing my products with regular people, not a model or even a celebrity. There's something unique and raw about seeing my designs on a regular person, just because they won't try hard or trying to be anybody but themselves, really. That time, it was more like it started with really my neighbors. Mm-hmm. People I see every day pass by. Seeing it on them first, it kind of helped me, you know, one thing to expand that so I can see it on a tourist, somebody who from France came here for a couple of days for vacation. Mm-hmm. And once they meet me and buy my product, somehow they will take a picture once they're back in their home and then send it to me and say, "Oh my God, I love my hats." I have so many pictures from that time, and most of them are like Europeans, mm-hmm. and they always follow up by sending me a picture wearing the hats or the jewelry they bought from me. And that's one thing also I always believe, that, you know, when you starting anything, start from your feet, meaning mm-hmm. the people around you, your neighbors, your people first, then you see yourself expanding.
Mm-hmm. Especially because I'm thinking these real customers that you're describing are people who work every day. Mm-hmm. And I find it admirable that they have maintained, not everyone, I suppose, but most of them, mm-hmm. that sense of self mm-hmm. that a lot of privileged people have lost, because a lot of privileged people want to aspire to look like a model. They always want to look like somebody else, right? There is a
perfect.
Lot of
that. Let's say perfect. They want to look like perfect.
Exactly. Perfection. Whereas there is something very beautiful and very, very real in just adorning yourself with what makes you feel joyful, beautiful, more like yourself. A new idea to me. I had never thought about that. But anyway, I asked you to bring a specific object with you, and I would like you to describe this for our listeners.
This specific one is actually from a good spiritual brother of mine. His name is Bai Denbo So. He is, for me, he is that specific, typical bifile. When you see him, the energy, the frequency he is in, even his voice, his appearance, everything just gives me what my grandfather said about bifile. Mm. So it happened that he came on a vacation one day, and I was at the tables on 120th Street, where I met Jordan Castile, who was a resident in Harlem Studio Museum. So she asked me, because when my brother come, he is, when you see him, it's unbelievable, okay? So everyone will come trying to take picture with him and stuff like that. He's like a superstar when he's around. So Jordan asked me if she could take a picture of me and my brother and then paint it for the museum. I'm like, of course. So we did that. And that day, the clothes he was wearing, one of them was this one. So it happened that he gave it to me for a gift. So this is called Yahas. And Yahas is patchwork. So patchwork is a very, very much long time story. Patchwork is being here by a prophet, actually, what I heard. The first person who wore a patchwork was a prophet. Now, my grandfather, he was sent by his religious leader that time in Africa to create a village. You go somewhere in the jungle and you clean it inside out, meaning spiritually, because there's other creatures that live there. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, the animals, everything you need to clean. And then you make some kind of, how do you call that, limits of it. Mm-hmm. And then you give it a name and bring the people to live there. That's how they used to make these villages. When he was sent to create one, mm-hmm. he was alone there. Somehow he stayed there for a very long time because he had to finish it. He said that never I will do anything that's against the divine order. So he said that he had a divine order to go create a village. Now he can't go back until that work is done. So when he stayed there, his clothes start ripping, just crazy ripping. Then he said, I can't go anywhere to change it. So something clicked by him picking up a piece of cloth, mm-hmm. that he'll find. Anything he'll find that can be attached, so he's covered. That's where patchwork come from, for the bifiles. So it's a spiritual clothes. It's a spiritual meaning. That's why we do it. Now, what I see in patchwork is, because the way we make it, this is actually handmade, this one. You can tell it's handmade. So what I see is, you see how you are white. Mm-hmm. I am black. Mm-hmm. You are from there. I'm from here. Someone else from another. The colors of the patchwork, the differences between us. But then we take all that and put it together, and we have one thing in common, the thread. It's one thread that take all those colors together to make clothes that one person wears. So for me, that thread, that one thread, is the God that put us together, that togetherness of humankind. This is how I see patchwork. This is why I believe in it. Like, clothes itself is something very spiritual for the Africans. Example, we have this fabric in Senegal called Seru Rabal. Seru Rabal is very rare to find. Specific people make it too. So Seru Rabal is that blanket when the baby is born. The belief of this Seru Rabal is it holds.
It envelops the baby.
Right. And that Seru Rabal is holding every blessing that the baby is bringing on earth. Mm. So that piece means something for the Senegalese. And it's everywhere in Africa.
Are there other hierarchies that would exclude some Senegalese from having that type of fabric for their baby? Meaning, are there people who are left out without this protective blanket for their baby?
Everyone in Senegal does that.
I see.
Okay. Yeah, it's just what we know, that it's important that when the baby is here, to give him his gift, which he came with, which is the blessings.
Yeah.
We have to symbolize it with something that we believe it's pure, as the baby is.
here you have this beautiful robe, this patchwork multicolored robe, and that's your blessing.
And also, I'm literally sitting on my bed right now, and it's patchwork as well. Because this specific one, like having patchwork, actually, it can be under your sheet or on top of your sheet. It can be however you want to put it. But on your bed, my grandfather said that just patchwork is a protection, period. That's what he said. It's a protection. So long time ago, elders used to put it on their bed as to protect them while they're sleeping.
You're taking all measures, right?
Oh, absolutely.
In a way, because you know that this podcast is about luxury and desire. And I like what you're telling us today, because you have brought in a different perspective about what luxury can be. Luxury doesn't have to be something very expensive in terms of monetary value, but it has to be unique and special in terms of these connections and the meanings and the stories behind it.
Yeah, you absolutely said it so right. We lost touch of meaning, intention, and I mean the whole entire world. We use words to just say whatever or anything. And I think it's important to get back to who we were, just because it will help us see better the future, the path, or where we are right now. When we say luxury is something that holds an energy, because one day the new luxury will be spirituality. The currency will be spirituality. I don't know when it's going to be, but it's going to be. Spirituality is free. But they're going to sell it one day. The new luxury will be the currency, which is spirituality. That time, whatever that time going to be. Now, let me come back to what luxury means to me. It's something that holds energy, that aligns with your soul. For me, this patchwork means way more than anything I can ever make in the future too. Even if I were to make something with diamonds on it for Beyonce or Oprah or anybody, Biden, whoever, right? It won't mean the same thing as this cloth right now. This is way more. It's not even comparable. I can't even compare them, because this speaks God's language. And anything with diamond or expensive that we call luxury here means just here. Mm-hmm. It's just here. The value is just here. But this, the value is the unseen and the seen.
And at the same time, that allows me to make a bridge here, a connection, because you are working on creating objects that you personally consider beautiful and that you would like your customers to have in the near future. So this patchwork is also the inspiration for you in how you approach your creativity.
It is actually, because that intention will hold the energy, will hold that power of what you're creating. We have one thing in common with God, and whatever your God is, again, and that one thing we have in common is creation. For me, it's my way also to connect with my God when I'm creating.
Yes.
This is why everything I do, my paintings, right, my art or my looks, you got to believe in what you do. You got to believe in what you do. You have to know that you have something valuable. And valuable meaning, it comes from the source, through me. I'm not looking at anyone design or outside to create. I don't. My place of inspiration is the nature, the park, Central Park. And then when I come right back, I'm creating, because I receive something in terms of colors, in terms of the shape. I take most of the shapes from the trees. There's no value. You can't put any value on that. You just happen to be in the world and sharing your work. You have to put money on it for people to get it. But if I was rich enough, I would make stuff and just give it to people, honestly. Yeah, just for the sake of sharing, because I consider myself being a vessel. I know that this is great stuff in terms of spirituality. And when you see it, you see joy. That's what people say, the feedback. Because of the color, the cut, they say they see Africa. My art, they say that they see themselves, feel elevated. This is the feedback. So I have a complete understanding of who I am and also the path that I so believe that my grandfather literally, you know, designed it for me, just for me. Yes. I'm a big believer. I believe in humankind being uplifted. And I want to feel that while I'm living. I want to do that while I'm living. I want to be that for humankind so they can see this example. That's really what's going to help everyone.
Let me ask you this, I think, final question, and not to keep you here forever. What should we expect to see from you? I know that you have something in the works. Would you like to make an announcement?
Yes. Well, so I make pieces every week. I don't wait for something to happen for get out of that mindset of waiting for something to happen. I make it happen. I do have a fashion show every year. That's not a surprise because I just know that every year I'm going to have one. This coming one, let's pray, because I am actually asking them the Marcus Garvey Park here behind my house. So they have this grant that they, you know, want to give to artists from the Mellon Foundation.
Oh, yes. Nice.
Right. So I sent a proposal to do my fashion show 2024 in the park, which is something that I always want. And my first place was Central Park, because Central Park is literally almost my second house. There's no day I don't, after, you know, the end of the day, I go there, that's where I do my prayers, daily prayers, or inspiration, or just to be with myself. And that, I will definitely have Central Park one day. I don't know when. But let's pray I get this in. But either way, I get a grant, I don't get the grant, I'm going to do what I did last year, which is get my table during summer on Lenox Malcolm X Avenue, where there's a lot of tourists. We have, you know, restaurants and stuff. I sell my side hustle, which is the hats, the paintings, and then take all that money. And so August, I was able to finance. That's how I did with my fast last year. Yeah, I'm not someone who actually go, because a lot of people were telling me this, go get some, you know, get some sponsors, go ask for help for the business round. Nobody have it. Nobody have it like that to be even sharing it or stuff. So I kind of took that out of my mind. I don't expect from anywhere, no money from anywhere. I make it happen the way I know how to make it happen. So I'm definitely going to have a fashion show next summer, and you are invited.
Well, thank you very much. I cannot wait to see your creations in real life, Falu. And I want to thank you because you gave us a lot to think about and a very fresh perspective on the role of objects in our life.
Yes.
Right? Creation, yes. Creativity in our life. And I love that. So I want to thank you again, and I cannot wait to meet you in person.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. Believe. Just got to believe. So believing in something is important. Have a belief, because that's what holds that intention of what you're doing. And then the energy is created. Thank you for believing in me.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and thank you for this podcast. And I'm praying that, you know, this podcast be beyond your expectation in the greatest way possible. Yes.
Thank you very much. Always you, remain creative.
Yes. Thank you, Queen. I appreciate it.
From New York City, the city of ambition, aspiration, and desire, this is Populax with Thomae Serdari. Populax is the place where we bring attention to objects of personal luxury, objects of desire, objects that have shaped our experience. Populax is a series of stories of desire recounted around one object at a time.